Hi there, everyone. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Back here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Welcome to June. Welcome back. And our fundraising effort was really fantastic. You know, one of the things that you've got to appreciate, I mean, it's just, you don't have to appreciate, but it's really wonderful to see that when somebody sells you a product, by the time that product gets to you, by the time that very product gets to the store that it's coming to, it takes so many things to have that product get to your door. If you have broccoli at home, it's taken hundreds of people to get that spear of broccoli on your table. To get a radio program, to get started, to be brought to you, you know, you say, oh, it's just time to, over there, they just turn on the radio and they talk. It is such an amazing technical event to have a radio program. Television program is a different thing. That's another thing. It's like a movie. But a radio program is so special. And if you're going to get this to work, first of all, we need to do what we did, which is raise money from you people. And we thank you for honoring your pledges, because your pledges and the money you send in helps keep the station going. But then you've got the people behind it who are doing it. Like Michael was just talking about, the coordinator of the premiums, who gets to try to send out all of these things that we have promised you, and as we get your stuff going, and we have all these wonderful people at the station. But the mechanics of it are kind of amazing. And I enjoy the mechanics of the world. I enjoy how the world functions. But just for my first statement of June, I want to talk about the mechanics of just getting this program started and the mechanics as mastered by Michael G. Haskins, who is the man who pulls it, I mean, solidly together. He's the master of the radio voice. And you can't imagine how many times I'm calling him and saying, hey, well, is it going to be late today? Are we going to do this? Are we going to do this? Do we have to get this on? Do we have to? All the things he has coming at him from 1,000 different directions. And he's this master who's got to get one job. His job is, boom, to get the thing started on time. Amazing. Amazing to watch. And one day, if you send an email to Michael and ask him if you could just go in as a guest to see, to watch the studio from the outside. Like, we have a separate studio here. People are welcome here as well to see how a radio program goes on. Well, so starting with the beginning of it has got to be the greatness of the engineer who gets us on the air. That's number one. And then Lisa and I, Lisa Arnone, my current co-host, who is helping me engineer this program, pull together things on the program, and then, boom, we get ready. We're on air. We step up, and there we are. So pulling today's program together, we're doing a program, and because it's the beginning of June, and it's the first time we've been on air for a month, with having you available to us, we're going to make a program today with you calling in. We're going to ask you, the listener, to join us today. And you're going to be calling us in at 212-209-2900. And that's going to be happening later in the program as you'll join the conversation that we're going to get started. And the conversation that was, first of all, Lisa, welcome.
I'm enjoying
so much what we're doing.
Me too. I'm enjoying it very much. I love talking together.
And what we're doing and learning from each other, you know.
Yes.
And not only learning, doing research and preparing stuff in between the time that we were off for the time that we will be back. So there are many ideas that we've come up with that are really phenomenal. I mean, great stuff for next week.
Yes.
Next week, you got to set your clock for the Tuesday, Wednesday program, because it's some of the most interesting stuff you could imagine. It's about psychology, but it's really learning. But today I want to talk about familiarity. I want to talk about what feels safe. What makes you get to rest on the inside? The human being has an excitatory potential. When you get excited, You could be excited over something positive, about something that's going to come. Or you could be excited over something negative. Like the other day I saw a young boy who has panic attacks, phobia of thunder. Thunder. And he was visiting me and he has panic about thunder. He hears thunder and he poops in his pants. He's terrified. He has no associations with the noise. And the best that people are able to make of it is there's something in the barometric pressure that threatens some part of his existence. We don't know what it is, but it does signal the barometric pressure. And he's always trying to get to pay attention. You could look at this on air. It's called astrophobia. Astrophobia. And it's like, so you watch this in a young boy and you say, what an amazing reaction over something that's not psychological. He was never wet, never unprotected. There was never around loud noises. Why would he have this thing? So we were looking at it. But we see this. We see many of these things with people, fears. So when you get excited, you have this excitatory potential, and it could either go to terror. You could be a nervous type, and you get nervous about things, or you can get excited. Either way, you feel like peeing in your pants, right? But that's just part of nature. You know, nature, when it sees you getting excited, it says, hey, excitation means there may be battle. So the body reads excitation as potential danger, and you could either be ready to fight or flee or play. Any one thing. But the body says you better make your body as light as possible for this battle, and that's why the urinary feeling and wanting to pee, and you begin to sweat and stuff. You know, your body's getting you ready. Excitement is good. It's nice. It's wonderful. It's part of growing, but it also could be a trigger going on in your brain that says there's something wrong. So let's start off with the premise that people don't like being nervous. Almost nobody does. The only person I know who likes to be nervous is me. I like to be nervous before a radio program because my energy goes up. So if I get nervous, are we going to get connected? Is Michael going to do the thing? Is this going to happen? Is this switch going to work? Is this button going to work? Is the CD going to record? All of that stuff, I put that on myself before every program because if I don't do it, by the time I get on the air, I'm sleepy. See, this keeps me going. By now, people like Lisa have watched me, and they say he's doing his buzz, right? Just keep him going. So having this excitatory potential, we're talking about this, and wanting it on some level to stay within a certain range. What people like as their ideal condition is to be alert and calm, excited and calm at the same time. How do we do that? One of the methods of doing that is to find familiarity, areas of familiarity. And one of the areas of familiarity that I want to look at today is relationships. And not only do I want to look at relationships, don't go, oh, there he goes again. No, just relationships. I'm talking about communication. I'm talking about some remarkable things that have changed when it comes to people and their communications with their families. Just when parents thought that they might be finally free of their children, just when parents said, oh boy, I put the kid through college and I'm ready to go, many of this year's college graduates will pick up their degrees and move back home. Even those who don't may continue to live off their parents' money. This fragile economy could easily exacerbate the phenomenon of delayed adolescence, keeping Americans in their late 20s and even early 30s dependent on their families for years.
Well, you know, it's not as bad as it sounds, Armand. The latest research does show that the closer bonds between young adults and their parents might be positive and do not necessarily compromise independence and individuation.
All right. So that's an interesting thought there, Lisa. In other words, here they are now. You're going back to your mother and father, right? Which is, let's think about how that works. That works two ways. About the time that a kid graduates college, the mother is going through menopause. Now, menopause is the empty nest syndrome as well. Now you feel kind of empty. You have nothing to do. What's going on? And your kid comes back and says, Mommy, I need you. Right? And that kind of say, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm not so useless after all. So they kind of welcome it back. Now, we're not talking about the fathers, because I'm not so sure the fathers are that involved in all this, unless it's with his favorite daughter, which they usually are. But most of the fathers, they're not set for this. They thought it was time to party, you know. They said, oh, wait a minute. Kids are going off, and we're going to go, you know, retire and party. But the kids are back. They're back, and they're living at home, and they have this communication, and they set this up. Now, the research is showing us that the mentality of the younger person who is now in contact with their family is better.
20 years ago, about half of parents reported that they had spoken with a grown child in the past week. Now, 87% said they have. And mutually satisfying.
And I wonder if the parent isn't the mother. You know, they didn't distinguish between mother and father. So here we have this new thing. Texting, email, cell phones. Hi, Ma. You know, it's an automatic. What percentage of people have constant contact with their family now where they may not have had it in the past? Think about you with your dad, Lisa, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're your dad. You got cell phones, right?
Yes.
Text him?
Yes, we text all the time.
All the time. I see you're not doing it now.
I'm working now.
Right. You text some of the time.
We text some of the time.
I like to do that with kids. Yeah, I do that all the time. Oh, yeah? You're not doing it now. All right. But texting is fun. Writing back and forth, writing back and forth, writing back and forth, writing back and forth, right? It brings him into your world, and it brings you into his.
And I do find, and this is, I think, a place where fathers can be coming into it, although I don't want to, you know, set gender roles. You can get advice. So if I'm in a situation where I have a dilemma or I have a question about something professional or personal, and I want to check in with someone who I feel won't judge me and who accepts me as I am, then I might text my father.
Like, should I take the number 4 train or the 6 train going uptown?
It could be that, or it could be...
And the wisdom of somebody, let's say you texted me and say, Armand, I'm going uptown to 86th Street on Lexington Avenue. What should I take, the 4 or the 6 or the N together? I say, I'll take the N to Bloomingdale's and then switch for the 6 and go uptown that way. And you go, oh... Now, what is that? Just you were able to get to me real quick, and I was able to get to you real quick back? And you wouldn't have that opportunity years ago. You would never think of just calling me on a telephone to ask me subway instructions.
Right.
So having the availability of the wisdom of somebody is nice. Do parents nag on the phone, on text? There's a really good question, and this is one that I want you people to answer. You know, I think if your parent nags you on your text or cell phone or leaves messages or an email, if they nag you, I'll bet your machine doesn't work. I'll bet it's one of those cases, oh, my cell phone died. Oh, my battery doesn't work. I'll make a bet that you become at war with your own machinery because parents have access to you through nagging. Now, the thing about texting is because you have a limited number of messages, of units you could use. Is that right?
Unless you get unlimited.
But isn't there a certain limit of for each message?
No. Okay. Not with texting.
So there's a certain limit to the amount that you can kind of get across on texting, because you got these little tiny screens, you got these little words that come across, and you barely could read the whole thing as it comes to you. So it's not really good for nagging.
It's not good for prolonged communication.
Yeah. Are you married yet? You know, things like that. Have you ever, did you meet anybody who could give it? That's not texting kind of stuff. So text kind of eliminates, or this kind of technology kind of eliminates the highly negative interaction. And the beauty of that is that if it didn't, you would make yourself dysfunctional. You would make your phone dysfunctional, right? You wouldn't answer your phone. Oh, my battery died, which is the thing that you hear from all passive-aggressive people, right? Everybody who's got cell phone trouble, passive-aggressive. Isn't that a good generalization?
Yeah, I like that.
Everybody who has trouble with their email, passive-aggressive, right? If their computer breaks down, passive-aggressive. If they can't respond to you because of something, if their phone broke, dog ate the homework, passive-aggressive, meaning the following. I am mad at you because I don't want to give you direct answers, and you're forcing me to give you direct answers, so I'm going to blame it on the phone, or I'll blame it on the computer, or I'll blame it on the carrier, or I'll blame it on somebody else. You know, I was underground, and my phone didn't work, and the battery fell out, and I'm, all right. This is Armand DeMille with Lisa Arnone. We're talking about the effects of modern technology on relationship. There are positive and negative effects on relationship. Modern technologies have changed the way that people communicate with each other. There are small and innovative ways for people to communicate. Text messaging, email, chat, social networks. They allow faster and more efficient communication. They could also help build relationships. However, they also have some negative side effects, such as limiting personal contact and straining relationships. Talk about family relationships. Modern technologies limit the amount of separation between work and home. With the advent of computers, the internet, and cell phones, people can and are often expected to address work issues from home. They can limit family interactions and cause conflict between family members. So your work is at home. If you have your computer there, I mean, it's like a hey, Daddy, I will be right with you, but Daddy's doing business. Mommy's doing business. I mean, I'm writing a patient. I'm, you know, doing a thing.
But that also makes me wonder, is your home at work? Because it goes in both directions, or it could.
Well, you know, the rule is you can't bring your home to work. That's considered personal stuff. You can only bring work to home. That's an interesting thought, though. Yeah, you're not allowed to bring it in. You're not allowed to have your cell phone. I mean, most jobs, I know in advertising that 90% of what I'm told is that 90% of the people are spending their time just doing texting to each other and instead of working, and that there's nobody who's watching it. Everybody expects this is the way it is. So they settle for about a 10% production rate. Now, young people use modern technology to increase the numbers to communicate with their friends. Text messaging, online chats have become the preferred method of youth communication. I know kids, young people, who have not spoken to anybody in a while. They date without ever using a phone. Now, I have a personal preference. You know, I know this is going to show my stuff. I have a landline at home. Landline. It's a wire. It goes down through the floor. When Verizon came along and said, would you like Fios, which takes it out of that and puts it into space, I said, no, I wanted to keep this one line on the ground. You have that too?
Mm-hmm.
Do you really, really?
Mm-hmm.
What made you do it?
Because I know two times, 9/11, and when there was just that earthquake, all cell phone shuts down, and I need to make a phone call if there's an emergency.
So you need a phone that is not one you plug into the wall. You need just a plain, ordinary landline.
Regular phone.
Well, that's not the real beauty of the landline. You know, you and I are going to have to test this out, Lisa. The real beauty of the landline is talking to somebody. You talk to somebody on a landline with a landline phone, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. It sounds so totally different. Whereas if you're using text messaging and cell phones, you're kind of talking past the person. I have a good friend, Audrey Clark, who helps us out every now and then answering the phone, but she only works by cell phone. So she picks up a phone at the front desk. She doesn't know you have to talk into the other side, because with cell phones, you talk past it. So does it make it more close? Does it make it not? Modern technologies even allow couples to be in contact with each other, more than ever before. Is that a good thing? Do you want that much contact? Maybe yes, maybe no. You be all over each other. It's really wonderful during the love phase. You know, every minute, every second, a kiss, a hello. The thing I love is, by the way, I'm going to be speaking with you about your contacts with your parents by cell phone, text messaging, and email, and I want to hear your information about it when we take our break at 212-209-2900. That'll be in 12 minutes. But one of the things that happened in my office, and this is very interesting, I interview people, and I interview people who come to see me because they want to know what is the state of their mind. And they say, oh, Mom, would you see me one time, which is what I do, and tell me what you think of my mind? That's just, if you go to a doctor, you say, what do you think of my body? You go to a urologist, whatever it is, you check it on it, you check it up, right? Bring your car into a repair store, what do you think of my car? Well, people come in to me to check on their mental status. So they come in and it costs a lot of money to see me by the hour, because it takes me 1 hour of my time, plus all the other stuff, the research, all the other stuff I got to do around it. Okay. So people pay for this. They pay to see me. And then they come in paying like $2 a minute or some $3 a minute, and their phone rings. Now their cell phone rings and they go into panic. And it's really remarkable to be sitting where I'm sitting when someone is in panic about their cell phone ringing. I don't care that their cell phone is ringing. And they're upset and they apologize. I don't know why they're apologizing that their cell phone is ringing. And then they try to shut it off and they never can. And then the funniest thing about it is they peek to see who's calling. All that takes place. And what do I care? Why are you embarrassed that you're having this thing take place during this time? I'm fine with it. Well, how does your phone affect you? How does your contacts affect you? What is it like to have someone tracking you every minute, people calling you, trying to find out what's going on, trying to find out if a message was there? How has your relationship with your parents changed? Is it better? Is it not better? Is there anything about the contact with a parent that you would say is not positive because of the new technological developments? Young people nowadays spend extra years in school because they don't have jobs available. There's no job out there. They haven't had the work history, which allows them to get a year and a half of unemployment like everybody else takes so nicely. So the people who are in school don't really have a shot. So what do? They stay in school. They stay in school, and they go staying in school much longer than they used to. Now they don't want to take lower paying jobs with irregular hours. So the parental support seems to be a good thing. The new arrangement allows for the parents to support the kids for a much longer period of time, and the adolescent age has grown from 20 to 30.
But we are also all living longer and healthier, so maybe it's better for the parents too.
Sure. So it may work all around. So is it that we're all stretching ourselves? You know, when I was young, there was nobody could find me. When I went out of the house, that was it. I was out. I think my mother used to say, I wonder if he'll be dead when he comes home, or if he won't come home, or I wonder if he will get home, or what time he'll get home. There was a curfew and all that stuff, but they had no way of knowing where you are. They didn't know. They assumed. A child goes out, the child is living. The child will come back. That's the assumption. Nowadays, you know where the child is almost every minute. You could even have video cameras watching your child at virtually every minute. They have video cameras on streets, and I know people who have been known to look out to watch their kids playing on video cameras so they can see them at every second, just because it's available. Well, are your parents tracking your life? And do you find it something that's appealing to you? This is what we're going to want to know about. Now, we could be celebrating that the strong bonds between today's young people and their parents could be evolving, something brand new, like Lisa's saying. Maybe there's a more formidable adolescence. Maybe the connection with your parents is better. Maybe it's helping with the menopausal years. You know, maybe it's helping a person get through. Is there anybody who doesn't like it? Does daddy really not like this? If he doesn't like it, he's not speaking up. But we do have 50% divorce rate. So now we have to ask the question, is the parent-child bond highest with single parents rather than with parents who are married, who are still married? And if the parents are still married, are they really married? Or is the, you know, dad off in some other world and mom's at home and has a relationship with the children? Those are the questions in this new world, and I think it's kind of worth asking. Not that there's a good or a bad, because what we see is evolution, what we see is change. This is Armando Mill with Lisa Arnone, back with you, happy to be back with you, here on The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, guests. You want to hear the quote of the day? The quote of the day is by Dr. Johnson. That's an old time ago, right? Almost all absurdity of conduct comes from imitating those we would never want to resemble. The most absurd us comes from the us that is imitating people who we would never want to resemble, like our parents, like we become like them, the worst part of them. And the other quote that's really great is, it is hard to fight an enemy who has outposts in your head. So do you think you have an enemy with an outpost in your head? Isn't it nice when you could have a parent, a sister, brother? I think about the most rewarding of all texting comes from brothers and sisters. I think that stuff is just beautiful. I have seen some amazing stuff there, which is very different than parental kind of relationships. But what do you think? What do you think, Lisa? Do you think it's an all positive, a semi positive, a medium positive?
Well, as you talk about it, I think it's what you would do if you were at home with somebody or seeing them all the time. A texting allows you to make comments on things, ask short questions, check in with somebody in a way that you might if you saw them all the time. And so brings the relationships with people who are not with you in closer. And that's a wonderful thing, especially with siblings, because you're not together anymore in the same way. But there is a part of me that misses being able to just say, I'm going out, and being gone.
Being gone. You know, I know it sounds crazy and it sounds silly. I also miss mail. I miss getting a letter. I got a letter from a caller the other day because I get so many emails and I welcome them, but there are hundreds. I got a letter from a listener and it was such a beautiful thing to get the letter. Such a pretty thing. So nice that it kind of said, it kind of touched my heart. It had a stamp, you know, It had handwritten. I'm going to write a couple of letters out to friends. This is Armando Mill with The Positive Mind. Our telephone number is 212-209-2900. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll play you a little music. And after that, my friends, we will continue with our program and take your phone calls. We'll be right back. Carl de Ruin, R O U E N. You ever like that kind of piano, which I do? That's on a piece called, on an album called Jazz, and the piece is called Black and White. This is Armand DeMille with you with Lisa Arnone. We are taking your calls today, asking you about your relationship with your parents and how they are affected by or connected to electronic communication one way or another. 212-209-2900. Make your calls right now. I'm dying to speak to you people I haven't spoken to in a while. We got a few lines open. Let's take a call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, just the thing about the telephone, the landline, all that.
Yes.
I refuse to let myself be locked in by, like, just one of these companies, which would put me either on cable or, you know, the fiber optic line, because if there's a natural disaster, you lose all three, television, phone, and the Internet.
And you would hate to be trapped. Oh, my God, you'd have to light a candle.
Well, actually, exactly. I'm kind of like a big advocate of, who wrote Orson Welles, what's his name, the author, Thoreau, Henry David Thoreau. I mean, here we are, we're in the modern world, technology is everywhere. I just wish we could just go back a couple hundred years, if not a thousand years.
Sounds like you're missing some softness in your life. Sounds like you're missing the tenderness, the softness, the gentleness of a world that moved just a little slower.
Exactly.
Really?
Exactly. And I could give a highlight of this. I have relatives in Europe, and I was so amazed when I was a bit younger how, in particular, when I went to a rural area in Hungary, it happened to be. And there's a house that's been in the family for like 200 years.
I'm losing your voice. Could you speak up a little?
There's a house that's been in the family for like 200 years.
Wow.
They had an old outhouse and didn't even have a telephone to the house. And it was just so nice. And, you know, and you can visualize. It used to be a postal horse rest stop. And when my great, 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 whoever bought it, it was only a postal horse rest stop for maybe 40 years, and then it's been in the family. But anyway, when I went back, I've been there several times, and when I went there in 2007, one of my cousins, she had a, you know, a laptop, and it just ruined the whole thing.
It kind of went against it. It went against it for you, because there's a part of you that's searching out. Now, I'm willing to guess that you're 52 years old, thereabouts.
I'm actually late 40s.
Late 40s, I'm sorry. That's a big difference, probably about 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in your childhood, therefore, you had an experience of a more gentle time with your somebody. And was Mom with you when you were young?
Yeah, I mean, both parents were with us, and then there was a divorce. And
when was the divorce?
When I was 5, but we had a tough...
Well, before the 5 years old.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember, can you remember anything back before 5 when you felt that family unit?
Sure. I can remember being 4.
And what was that like?
I just...
You felt safe.
Felt safe, yeah.
You felt safe. You felt at home. It's an amazing thing when somebody suddenly at the age of 5 has their heart ripped apart by a divorce. It's probably the most crucial time to 5 years old. We all go through it, and we get through it, and we get, you know, we deal with it, but you can see that there's a part that aches for the time before the split, the time before when things were now, communication was different. Now, look at you with history, which is very interesting. What's your first name?
I've called before. The name is Attila.
Attila, hi.
How are you?
Yes, I've spoken to you before. So as a kid,
yeah.
Attila, things were, for a four-year-old kid, things were kind of beautiful. After 5, then you have to deal with all kinds of communication. And is it possible that you could be cut off from your father, who's no longer at home, at a whim. You know what I mean? And this is the same concern you have about the companies nowadays and the telephones and the cell phones. And like, so what if one goes down and they all go down and then nobody will be in touch with me?
And I'll be happy.
Yeah, you'll be happy when you get back your family unit. Do you have anybody in your life nowadays who holds you when you sleep?
Yeah, I do. Sure.
Yeah, you got to cherish that a bit, Attila.
Absolutely.
You cherish that. Reward it. Give that person, whoever holds you while you sleep, give them something extra special today. Because they give you something that you really need. You know? And you, I bet you don't bring your cell phone in the bedroom. Or do you?
No way. The thing is powered off in the kitchen, getting, you know, the juice overnight.
And you're good. They most people would learn a lot from powering off their bedrooms.
Too much. Too much electricity going on today.
There's a lot of electricity. Nice to talk to you, Attila.
Same here, Armand.
Sure. 212-209-2900. So, the ache to go backwards, the ache to find that time of comfort. And it makes us regret a lot of modern things. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, good afternoon, Armand. How you doing?
Good, good. Who is this?
My name is Ed. Caller from Jamaica, Queens.
Ed?
Yeah, Ed. How you doing?
Good.
Basically, pertaining to personally use of the text messaging, with especially with my parents or with my brother, I find it impersonal on a personal level. I mean, I really don't like to communicate with it. I'm kind of like against all cell phones. The only reason I have a cell phone is because the job warrants that I have one, because I'm on call 24 hours. But in my personal life, I rarely use it. I mean, on the weekends, it'll sit in the house. People will call me on it. People will text message me on it. I just don't feel like it's a personal connection. And on a literal sense for me, I felt it dumbing me down when I did try to use it. I mean, I enjoy sitting down writing letters. I enjoy the tactile feel of the paper. I enjoy thinking about a thought. I enjoy spelling the words. I mean, you know, some people call me a Luddite, but I don't care. You know, I don't really find pleasure in the new ways of communication, even with my son. I think it dumbs you down.
Okay, let's look at this, all right? And one of the things I have, especially with my students, is trying to see it in a way that may benefit you to see it. It doesn't dumb you down. It dumbs you down. See, Ed, it's not what it does to all people, but it's what it does to you.
No, I'm not making a blanket statement.
No, I know.
Personally,
yeah, so you're saying it dumbs me down.
Yes.
It puts me, I don't, it's not my style, man. I sit down, I write a letter, I feel my hand on the paper, I feel the pen in my hand,
yes.
I feel the person in my heart.
Precisely.
But if the other people in the world could get along doing this, and they find it more personal this way, it's kind of amazing. It's almost something you can't imagine.
I don't see it that way as far as communicating with people who do communicate by text. I've done it, and I find that the person is not communicating the idea correctly. I mean, there's abbreviations, there's misspelled words.
Sure, and you have to do things with economy.
My cousin sends me text, for example. She's a big texter. She'll text. She's even on Facebook and tells you what she had for breakfast. And to me, it just seems like a bunch of gibberish, man. I mean, you know, it's like a bunch of bloody gibberish. She'll say, why didn't you answer me? Oh, for what? I don't care what you have for freaking breakfast. I mean, come on. You know, don't waste my time. If you got a thought to communicate with me, then communicate it. Something of relevance. This is my personal opinion.
So you see, no, but yes, it is your personal thing. So she's not wrong for doing it.
No,
but she does ask that you do it also, and she gets upset with you for not doing it.
Yeah.
And the two of you are saying, you know, we're just two different kinds of animals. You know, I'm the kind that doesn't really pay much attention to that. I don't care what you had for breakfast. You're the kind that needs to tell people what you had for breakfast so that somebody could come along and say, oh, yeah, I had the same thing, or I like what you had. You're asking for that kind of a response. We're very different that way.
Yeah,
we're very different. And you're the kind of a guy who's a very sensitive man.
Well, so Some would say not, but you know, that's your opinion.
All right, Ed, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi there.
I consider myself to be a sensitive kind of guy, and I disagree with your last three or four callers.
Tell me about it.
I'm probably older than all of them, and I think the technology is firsthand. But unfortunately, a lot of people do waste the bandwidth by talking about what they had for breakfast or whatever. I consider that a complete waste of bandwidth.
So can you tell me how you use it so positively to your advantage, and what would be the proper usage by your standards?
Well, you know, and the beauty of it, in many cases, is that when you really only need to have a minimal amount of communication, where you really only need to get a simple idea back and forth between a couple people, whatever it may be, you don't have to eat up the amount of time in some of the politeness that goes with phone conversation.
You know, right.
There's a politically correct way to handle a phone conversation, and yet in the case of, say, let's say something like texting, it can be down to a single sentence that says everything it would have taken you 5 minutes to say.
So that's good. Now let's talk about you and me talking right now on the phone, which we're doing on the phone. You could probably text this to me, but there's something in the genuineness of your voice, of the sincerity of the way you're saying it, the fact that when I hear
that's
you
true.
Talking about it, you're not saying it with anger. You're saying, you know, hey, there's something maybe missing here from another point of view. There is something in your attitude, your breath, your solid presentation of yourself that makes whatever you're saying seem more poignant. You know, it makes it seem more.
That's one thing about conversation you can never achieve in a, you know, through texting or whatever. You're never going to get that.
But writers could do it. I mean, Shakespeare could do it. And
sure, but it's, you know, we're not taking into consideration how many rewrites they must have had to do.
Ah, good point.
To get the idea across.
That's a good point. How many rewrites there are?
You don't know how many times they picked up that same paragraph and rewrote it to get their idea across.
Well, except like Ed, who says, you know, he just loves. Is it Ed who loves to sit there and write, and he loves
right.
the beauty
well,
of it. He loves the
know,
beauty
and
of
and
it.
The thing is, I also write short stories, and I find it far more productive to sit and work with a word processing application than I do. Pen to paper.
Sure.
Because then I can look at it, I can say, no, that full sentence belongs before or after that one, and I'm doing a run-on here, I shouldn't do a run-on, you know, and I can correct it as I go.
I can't imagine the other way, you know. I used to remember the other way when I was in my 20s. I used to write the long penmanship way. You know, I'd carry a pad with me that I was writing on as if I was writing something long, and I would be crossing out pages. I can't imagine that way, but, you know, Ilana Rubinfeld, who is a teacher, who is a kinesthetic teacher, said, and so did Marilyn Ferguson, they said there is something about writing with your hand that creates a different usage of the left part of your brain than if you're typing on a computer. And she said that the actual effort of writing by hand will bring out something very different than if you're just typing it on a keyboard. So it's an interesting experiment. It would be interesting to see. What's your name, by the way?
Michael.
It would be interesting to see, Michael, if you took one day and wrote by hand and another day and wrote a similar kind of thing on your processor to see if the essence of it changes.
That would be interesting.
Wouldn't it be interesting? Michael, by the way, what's the name that you would put on your short stories in case we ever see a short story by you, we could look it up and maybe read it?
Well, actually, I'm pretty sure that I just put Michael Rura as, you know, the stories. I don't use a pen name or a stage name for any of my writing, I don't believe.
So what is your last name?
Rura, R-U-R-A.
RURA. Well, maybe we'll look it up. Is it? Are you anywhere on the internet where we can find some?
Actually, I have a few stories that are probably in blogs at one place or another.
Well, I'm going to look it up. We will. I mean,
you want some story titles or?
Sure, give me a story title. This is going to tell me a great deal.
Let's see. What's that? No, that wasn't dog fight. That was Happy. Happy is the story about a dog that wishes to become a pound mascot.
Okay, well, listen, we're going to have to look these up ourselves.
Okay, all right, the other one is the Hell Pipe.
Thank you.
And between those, I'm sure you can find links to other ones.
I'm gonna look. I want to see what your style was.
Modern Society.
And see if you could try out.
I might want to try that writing experiment.
Experiment and let me know. Send me an email and tell me how you found it differently.
It's intriguing.
It's intriguing. Okay.
I was just a little bit put off with the gentleman who was talking about going back to a Thoreau sort of existence, and that just kind of offends me, because in some ways you could turn around and say we're in the salad days now with the height of technology.
Oh, well, Michael, you know,
it depends on how you want to look at it.
Of course, Michael, you would be put off by it because it would disturb you in some kind of way because it challenges some part of you.
Well,
but
I fully
understand.
I'm rude enough to call in just because I was put off.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for calling in. Thank you so much, Michael. 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. It's kind of amazing as you listen to people, because people are so different. They're so amazingly different. They digest differently, they think differently, they smell differently, they love differently, they touch differently. Fascination that we have, when I say we, I mean Lisa and I and the other people I know, is studying how different people are. Not how better they are, not how worse they are, not what's right, what's wrong, but how they do it differently. If somebody comes here and sits in my waiting room, we have a waiting room and we have a lot of therapists who work here, and they sit in the waiting room and it's how they sit there. The way they sit, do they take their coats off? Do they leave their coats on? Are they sitting back? Are they not sitting back? Are they relaxed? Are they tense? Are they playing with our games that we have out there? What are they doing? It's so different for each person that walks in. And our staff, our administrative staff, is clued into it. They can see. They can see that the behaviors are different and people need different things. And that's part of the beauty of the world. I mean, it's like a garden. You know, it's like, and that flower grows there. And there's the curly willow, you know, and there's the... 212-209-2900. Let's take one more call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
Good. Four men. I like this.
I'm in several categories that you talk about today. I my business that I had at some point in marriage had ended, and I had to move back home in my 40s. And at the same time, I was so engrossed with the business of so much of my life was on the internet and Facebook, and was diagnosed with anxiety and depression, all those kind of things that come. And I find that the technology exacerbated it, because there wasn't much real connection in my life. All of my life existed on the internet, and I realized that, and I let the account go, and I realized how lonely it feels not having so many so-called connections in the world, because I had a business that was connected to that. So there was like thousands of friends, so-called friends, that I had, but none of them really knew me or had my, you know, even my home phone number.
Well, what made you change it?
What made me?
What was the light? What was the thing that happened that you said to you? What's your first name, by the way?
Quentin.
So Quentin, Quentin or Quentin?
Quentin.
So what made you suddenly turn around and say, you know, I got to try living. I got to open the window. I got to breathe differently. I got to shut this off. I got to see what it's like to do. What made you do that?
It was several things that happened over a course of a couple of days when I had some connections with people, and I just got this profound sadness to it, because when I engaged them in a certain capacity, it was impossible for them to respond, because we didn't there really wasn't that connection. It was a fault. You know, I don't judge them. It's not their fault, but it's just the premise of the connection wouldn't allow a certain type of intimacy, and it crushed me, you know.
Yes, so there was a certain level that you could go to, and then when you tried to dip down, there was like a wall, a barrier that goes up against that.
Right.
Almost like a bleeper, and you say, oh, wait a minute, I want to say the words I'm sad and see what happens.
Yes.
And it's almost like, oh, there's a barrier to this. This is not allowed. It gets screened out. It gets blipped. It's almost like pornographic words talking about certain things.
Well, so because everybody seems to have the answer.
Yeah, but now I listen to you as a man speaking to me, Quentin, and you're such a heart-centered man. It's so beautiful to hear you talking. Do you get now, or do you have relationships with people that you can share yourself with?
Not at the moment. I mean, all right. A few, but since I moved back home, I haven't lived home in, like, you know, 20 years or so, and everyone has sort of moved away, and...
Well, get yourself out. I don't even care if you go to meetings, you know, go to 12-step meetings, anything at all, where there are people of a similar kind of heart, just to talk to it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're ripe. You're ready.
Yeah, a few groups to talk about. I've been having panic attacks and stuff like that. And so I've been sort of housebound for a while.
Well, if you need some help with that, be sure to give me a call. We'll see what we can do for you. Quentin, nice to talk to you. Thank you. Thank you so much. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. My special thanks to Lisa Arnone for helping me put this together, and to Attila, Ed, Michael, and Quentin. And we will be back with you tomorrow at 1. You can hear today's program by going to thepositivemind.com and listening to our archive today or any other archives. And you can send an email, armand@thepositivemind.com. Back with you tomorrow at 1, my friends.